Category E4, News Broadcaster of the Year, Jonathan Healy.
Paddy McGahan was on Pat Kenny this morning. Mr. McGahan says he was raped by an IRA member in the 1990s, that he was subjected to a kangaroo court, and that effectively what happened was there was a Sinn Féin cover-up. He says he finds it hard to believe that Gerry Adams was given a list of alleged sex abusers anonymously, telling Pat that he finds it hard to believe that anyone could hand in a letter to Gerry Adams' home without being spotted.
Gerry Adams, he is telling the public that he got a list of 27 people or whatever it may be anonymously delivered to his door. Now, I find that very hard to believe, because you could walk up to my door or your door and put a letter in, but there's no way you can walk up to Gerry Adams' front door in Belfast and hand in the letter anonymously. It doesn't happen. It's a fortress, his house.
Of course, Gerry Adams then said he handed that information over to the Gardaí. It has taken to the floor of the Dáil within the last hour. We have had Mary Lou MacDonald in leaders' questions. She was also answering her own questions, I suppose, in many ways that were put in a previous statement from Fianna Fáil. But let's have a listen to the exchange between Mary Lou MacDonald. We'll hear her first, and then Minister for Education Jan O'Sullivan, who was taking questions on behalf of the government.
It is, of course, more than a mantra to say that those with information must come forward. And I think it was most eloquently put by Paddy McGahan himself. And I want to reiterate his words, if I might, Lascian Corley. He said that nobody should be afraid. Nobody should be afraid to come forward. And I want to reiterate that. Victims of sexual abuse and rape and sexual violence are very often anxious and fearful about coming forward. It can be fear of not being accepted by their own family. It can be fear...
Please.
Let's count court, if you don't mind.
Sorry, excuse me, this is leaders' questions. It's for leaders' questions and answers by the minister, please.
It can be fear of social ostracisation. It can be fair for very, very many reasons. In the case of Paddy McGahan or others who say that they were abused by Republicans, so-called members of the IRA, the fear, of course, understandably, can be more profound. So I want to re-echo what Paddy has said. Nobody be afraid.
Well, could I put it to you, Deputy MacDonald, that in the first part of your intervention, you put the onus back on the victims. You put the onus on people who were abused. And in the second part of your contribution, you put the onus on other authorities. And this is clearly absolutely avoiding the responsibility that you and your own party have. And it's about time you and your own party took your responsibility in all of this, rather than putting it on people who were abused.
Sinn Féin Senator David Cullinan is on the line now. Good afternoon to you, Senator.
How are you, Jonathan?
Sinn Féin is abdicating responsibility here. It's the victims should come forward. Other agencies should do their job. What about Sinn Féin's responsibility in trying to protect children when members of the party were aware that there were paedophiles in operation in the Republic?
Well, first of all, of course, Sinn Féin has a responsibility, and Sinn Féin public representatives take our responsibility in dealing with all of these issues very seriously.
You didn't take it seriously because you didn't go to the Gardaí when you were aware.
I hope this is an interview where I will be given an opportunity to actually speak. I do believe that Sinn Féin has a responsibility. I believe Sinn Féin representatives have a responsibility. And the information that I have is the same information that you have in relation to what is in the public domain. That in 2002, Paddy, who I commend for his courage and his bravery for coming forward, went to a Sinn Féin councillor, Piers McGill. He made him aware of the allegations of abuse. He was encouraged to go to the authorities. He subsequently then met with Arthur Morgan, who is a Sinn Féin TD. Arthur Morgan again gave him support, gave him advice, strongly encouraged him in terms of the meeting they had, but also in a follow-up letter to go to An Garda Síochána and make a complaint.
Sorry, David, all of this is in the public domain. The question I have for you is that a member of Sinn Féin was in possession of an allegation of abuse, and you say it was up to Pádraig to go to the Gardaí. Take that argument out of it and ask yourself, while there was information in the possession of a Sinn Féin representative about an abuser, why did they not go to the Gardaí to alert the Gardaí of potential for activity to protect other children?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think we need to be aware of what the role of public representatives is in relation to dealing with these matters. And I'm a public representative for 15 years, and you deal with many sensitive issues. And we know that child abuse has been rampant in this island or on this island for decades. Tens of thousands of people, unfortunately, have suffered abuse. And
so
many people have come forward.
So somebody saw fit to convene a kangaroo court, at which point it would be dealt with, as opposed to go to the Gardaí.
I absolutely find the holding of an IRA inquiry into any of these issues as wrong, as something that should not have happened. The IRA was not equipped to deal with these issues,
Involved? And we don't, like, you have to admit it is a bit of a coincidence. After it went to Piers McGill and reported it, that a kangaroo court was convened.
With respect, I have every compassion for the victims here, and I want to be able to answer the questions that you put to me. The point I'm making in relation to public representatives in Sinn Féin being given information is that the information was given to them by the victim as an adult. And at that time, in those circumstances, the most
You're missing my point. That's in relation to a prosecution that may be brought against an accused. That's a different point. My point is that by failing to act, Sinn Féin may have put other children at risk. We would not have accepted this from a Catholic bishop who was perhaps saying, I couldn't bring forward information for X, Y and Z. What we're saying here is you had an opportunity to alert the authorities.
With respect, I don't believe that Sinn Féin failed to act at all. We have very, very robust guidelines that were developed in consultation with the
PSMI. Yeah, and we were told this morning that those guidelines conveniently only applied to members of Sinn Féin against whom accusations were made, not anybody else. Mary Lou MacDonald told Pat Kenny that.
That's in relation to allegations that are made against members of Sinn Féin and what the protocols are for that. I am, as I said, a public representative for Sinn Féin for 15 years, and I am acutely aware of my responsibilities in dealing with such sensitive matters.
So were they not acutely aware of the matter in 2002 and 2009?
I'm trying to answer your questions.
You're taking a long time, but you respect, and I think you're trying to dodge it like everyone else has been trying to do from your part.
I reject the notion that I'm trying to dodge questions. I have come onto this programme to deal with any question that you put to me because I want Pádraig to get justice. I have as much compassion for Pádraig as you or anybody else.
My question is about Sinn Féin's actions when they knew of the activity of a suspected
pedophile. I'm trying to explain to you what
Sinn Féin has done. Who was a member of the Republican movement.
Well, with respect, Jonathan, I hope that you will give me an opportunity to speak. You can keep interrupting me and we're not going to get anywhere. I want to be able to answer your question.
Here's your opportunity. David, here's your opportunity. You have 20 seconds to answer the question before I intervene again. Go for it.
What I'm saying is that Sinn Féin public representatives have done their best. They were presented with information by an adult who was a victim in the past, and they strongly advised that victim to go to the proper authorities. It was not for them to carry out investigations. That's not the role of public representatives. It is their role to encourage an adult to come forward, and that person at that time did not want to come forward, and it's very difficult to go over the head of a victim. And
there's your 20 seconds,
can I make one point to you if I can? We have all learned an awful lot over the last number of decades on how to deal with these issues. They are very, very difficult, very, very complex, very, very sensitive. I, as a public representative, and Sinn Féin as a party, has learned an awful lot, as has society.
So, David, this was 2009. We're not talking about the middle of the 1990s. We're not talking about the 1970s. Are you trying to tell me, honestly, that members of Sinn Féin hadn't learned lessons by 2009 about the risk of paedophiles or suspected paedophiles operating in the community and that action needed to be taken?
Well, I would support all victims to come to me. I would not want any child to be at risk. I have two children myself, so we're the same as anybody else. We want to protect children.
If you were in possession of that information, would you go to the Gardaí, David?
I have made the point. If a victim comes to me now because the legislation has changed and they give me information, I would tell them that I now have a responsibility to bring that information to an Garda Síochána.
So you'd only
do
it because the legislation was changed?
That's what I would do. In 2009, we had different circumstances. In 2009, that individual...
It was still abuse in 2009.
Pádraig was advised in 2009 At the meeting that he had with Arthur Morgan, and subsequently in a follow-up letter where he was strongly advised to go back to talking about Paddy.
My question, and I'll give you one more opportunity to answer it. The question wasn't about Paddy. The question was about other children that may be at risk because of information that Sinn Féin was in possession of and didn't go to the Gardaí. Do you stand over that as being the right and moral thing to do?
Sinn Féin, with respect, Jonathan, was in possession of information that was given to us by a victim who did not want to go to An Garda Síochána. And it is our job
to encourage
people...
You couldn't pick up and give an anonymous tip like any member of society?
...to do so, because the Gardaí will take complaints from the individuals. They need the individual to come forward. And we need to make sure as well that we create a vehicle and create a space that allows people to come forward.
I've given you an opportunity to answer the question. You keep moving it back to the victims. I'm saying separately, was it morally right for Sinn Féin to ignore the fact that there was a paedophile who was a Republican, who was in the Republic, who you could have gone to the Gardaí, even anonymously, with information about, and you didn't? And you stand over that decision?
I don't stand over that at all. What I'm standing over is what the Sinn Féin public representatives did in terms of
they were wrong not to go and provide that information.
With respect, and I've afforded you the opportunity of coming onto the programme to give my view. I have a very, very strong view in relation to these issues. I would not stand over child abuse. I believe that victims need every possible support. I believe victims should get justice. I have learned an awful lot about how to deal with these issues. Would I react differently now if information was presented to me? Yes, I would. We've all learned a lot of lessons in relation to how to deal with these issues. They are very sensitive. They are very complex. Sinn Féin is not alone as an organisation in having to have to deal with these issues and having perpetrators of abuse within our ranks, a very small number. What we need to do is, and Martin McGuinness, by the way, last year wrote to Enda Kenny and asked through the North-South Ministerial Council. They replied to that. It may be important,
and the Taoiseach should have reacted a lot longer, but earlier than he did, but he didn't. Can I just ask you one final question? The accusation can be levelled against Sinn Féin that because this alleged paedophile was a Republican, that's the reason you didn't act, and that if he was not a Republican, perhaps you would have.
No, absolutely not, and there can be no hiding place for any Republican who was involved in abusing children. And I can also say as well, and I want to be very, very clear to any other victim of abuse by any Republican who may be listening, that you should not suffer in silence. You should come forward. You should go to either the PSNI in the north or An Garda Síochána and get the justice that you deserve.
Those points were made as well by your colleague.
In 12 months.
The lads are having their dinner here, so what we might do is we might take a look in the shelter, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Hi, my name is Rebecca. I'm 25 years of age and I'm staying here in the Simon community.
How long have you been in the shelter, Rebecca?
I'm in and out the shelter now about 4 years, on and off. I've been on the streets. Oh, my God. When I first came homeless, I was on the streets for like 3 months, in and out squats now, sleeping underneath churches, in doorways, all things like that. Like, I didn't know what it was like. I was just new to it, but I got wrapped up in drugs and all that, like...
Tell me what it's like to sleep out, to sleep rough on the street without something like this, the shelter where you are now.
Oh, my God, it's terrible. It is terrible, especially when it's cold. Now I'm raining. Oh, it's no joke. Like, if you're off your head, you've no feeling of it, but there's nights there you wouldn't be. And you'll be on your own, and when you're sleeping, when you're laying down, it's just you're thinking, like, what you had. Do you know, like, the comfort you had at home, like, and when I had my own place, like, how homely it was, and I'd be trying to think of all these kind of memories to keep me going, like, oh, I'd wake up then, like, to maybe a man could be tapping me, like, and telling me, look, the church is starting, and it's okay if you could get up, or it could be just the road, you know, from cars passing, and that could wake.
Well, Cork is a small place as well. Yeah. Would you, when you were sleeping rough, did you see people you knew, and did people see you who you were?
I did, and it was very, very disgracing. Like, I swear, I'm not missing, like, people since I was childhood friends now and all that. Like, and they'd be saying to me, like, get up, like, you're coming home with us and all this, but you have to cut out everything. It's not easy, like, it's easy for them to say because they've never been there. But when you're in them shoes, it's not easy. Like, before now, like, when I heard people on heroin and stuff like that, I'd look down my nose on them, like, and I'd say, oh, God, how could they ever go near that? But little did I know, years down the line, I was going to get wrapped up in it. And now I know exactly what way they felt there and then, like. Mm. But it's horrible, especially like, if you see even family, you know, like a cousin now or an uncle or something like that passes, very disgracing. And it's not just disgracing me, I'm disgracing my family too, like.
I'm Noreen, I'm 19 years old. I've been in the same in 5 weeks long.
And how did you end up coming here, Noreen?
Well, basically, I left foster care when I was 18, and, like, I went back to move with my mum, and she, like, basically told me to F off. So after that, I was on and off homeless out in the streets, and then I was getting on the bed list for the Simons, and they took me in then, so I'm here today.
So how many nights did you spend on the street?
I was out homeless for more than two months.
2 months?
Yeah.
And where did you sleep?
I was out in squats. I was living in squats all over the place. And sometimes, like, I'd get into a friend's house for the night if they let me, like, stay around for the night. And then just streets then as well.
And when you slept like that, I mean, how dangerous was it for a 19-year-old girl to be sleeping on the street?
It's scary. Like, sometimes, like, you get weirdos and they'd be asking you to come on with them for money and this and that. And I was, like, looking at them. Like, I was, like, at, like, scared at the start. And then you just got used to the strangers coming up and you're just, like, go away, like. And then, like, sometimes at night time you'd wake up and there'd be someone standing over you. Like, one day there was this man and he was masturbating over me. And, like, I was so scared because I didn't know what to do because I was lying there. And, like, seeing him doing that, I was, like...
How did people view you when they saw you on the street?
Like, most people thought of me as a junkie. I'm a young girl, like, and I don't drink and I don't do drugs. That's one thing I don't do. I have a daughter. But people looked down at me like I was on drugs and I was this and I was that. Like, not everybody is the same. Like, everybody turns to drugs for their own reasons. Like, but, like, I didn't have any drug. Like, and people spat on me. They made some smart comments and dirty looks thrown at me. And, like, all because I was homeless. Like, we're not all the same. Everybody's different in their own way.
And what about the other people who are homeless out there? Did you get to know them? I know you don't do drugs, and a lot of them would, and a lot of them would have alcohol problems as well, which wouldn't affect you. But was there sort of a friendship or a camaraderie between the different homeless people?
Yeah, like, I, like, became great friends with the group of us. Like, all of us, like we all had something in common. Like, we were homeless. Like, everybody had, like, backgrounds that were similar to me. And some of them, like no matter what, like, drugs or alcohol, like, we were all, like, equal. Like, we treated each other the same. We're a family.
What happens next for you? You're here in the homeless shelter now.
Yeah. Hopefully now on Thursday I'm getting assessed. Marie, my key worker, she's after getting me assessed, thank God. So hopefully I get a place. And my own place, like, 2-bedroom for me and my daughter. And then hopefully I move on from there to work.
Eleanor, we're now in the main body of the shelter itself. So just looking around, I mean, there's a shower room here. We've got toilets. There's a TV and a rec room. So pretty basic stuff, but this is what people are bedding down to for the night.
Absolutely. I suppose, look, it's the evenings are getting darker. And I suppose, look, the cold weather is ahead of us. Hopefully not too cold. But, people are starting to come back and back to the shelter. They're glad of their beds and their rooms, and I suppose they have access to, some still food and hot food, tea and coffee. And we have a recreation room where they play pool and watch a bit of telly and do the same as the rest of us.
A little bit of creature comfort. That's
exactly,
really all it is.
Exactly. But it's still pretty basic at the end of the day, I suppose. But
what we know is that the 47 people who will be staying here tonight, they're really at the tip of the iceberg, really, because all of the other problems are coming up underneath with people who are becoming homeless, families who are becoming homeless. I mean, what you can provide here is a temporary fix, but you're going to need more in the months ahead, I'd say.
Look, we can get options for people and get them out of the shelter. It is supposed to be emergency accommodation, and for some people, they're here far too long. We're kind of hoping that maybe there'll be some immediate initiative for the winter that we can house or put shelter over people, just which is really a basic human right, and that's our immediate hope. I suppose in the long term we would hope that there would be some housing provided, and we are we really are struggling to move people out of the shelter, and the feedback from staff is they're saying no to people, some people at the door now at night. We're trying to accommodate as much as we can, obviously. That's a really hard place for people to be at the front door saying, sorry, we haven't got room for you. News Talk 106 to 108.